Good day and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing star and one on your touch-tone phone, and you may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note this call is being recorded. It's now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Mr. Jeff Holtzman. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks a lot for joining this call. You all should have gotten the media advisory, and so as you know, this is a call to discuss a new lawsuit being filed against the Department of Commerce. Today, our organization, Cause of Action, which is a nonprofit government accountability group, is proud to announce that our clients, David Gaethel of New Hampshire and Northeast Fishery Sector 13, which represents fishermen in Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, North Carolina, Rhode Island, and Virginia, are suing the Department of Commerce over a regulation that would devastate much of the East Coast ground fishing industry. The industry, as some of you know, is currently in decline due to federal regulations that have made it simply unprofitable for many fishermen to operate. A large majority of these operations will be forced to shut down, go out of business, if the government forces fishermen to pay out of pocket for at-sea monitoring, which of course is a program that the government has traditionally funded. So having said that, we have a couple officials from Cause of Action on the line. We also have David Gaethel and John Heron from Northeast Fishery Sector 13. So right now I'm going to turn it over to Stephen Schwartz, who is a counsel here at Cause of Action, and Stephen has some more details on the complaint.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff, for that introduction, and thank all of you for joining the call to learn more about this really important case. We've sued the Department of Commerce and a number of its sub-agencies, NOAA and the National Marine Fisheries Service, over this at-sea monitoring program. Right now, fishermen who fish for ground fish, and that's basically bottom-dwelling fish like cod, flounder, and so on, are required to invite on their fishing trips these federal contractors referred to as at-sea monitors. The at-sea monitors go along on the fishing trips, sometimes multi-day trips. They bunk with the crew overnight, and they're there basically to observe everything that the crew would do when they're doing their fishing. Now, this itself is bad enough, and there are legal and constitutional problems with it. But what makes it really much worse is that in the past, the agencies have always paid for this program, whereas right now, 3 weeks from now, possibly slightly more, the fishermen are going to have to pay for it themselves. The agency has told the fishermen that now you're going to have to pay for it. Now, this is a serious problem because even in the agency's own view, it's essentially undisputed that the fishermen simply can't pay for it. If the fishermen are required to pay for it, even in the agency's own estimation, more than half of them are going to go out of business. And that's the fishermen, with downstream effects on the crews, on buyers and sellers of seafood, on restaurants, with kind of rippling effects through the entire economy of New England. Now, there are a number of legal problems with this. First of all, there's kind of the legal irony of the fact that the agency is specifically charged by Congress in the statute, in the governing statute, with preserving fishing as an industry and as a way of life. Instead of doing that, the agency intends to basically destroy this industry overnight. As for the specific problems with funding for at-sea monitoring, there are basically two ways to view the industry funding requirement. One way is to view it as the agency imposing a tax on these fishermen to fund the agency's preferred monitoring program. That is simply something that the agency doesn't have authority to do. The agency only has the authority that Congress granted it, and even within the scope of what the agency is allowed to do, it can only pursue those purposes using the money that Congress has decided to appropriate. In this case, the statute does not give the agency the authority to impose taxes on industry, And even if the there were some sort of statutory basis for it to do it, for the agency to do it, Congress hasn't appropriated the money, and the agency is not permitted to. And when the when there isn't enough money that Congress has appropriated to fund the agency's preferred programs, the agency is not permitted under statute or under the Constitution to fund those programs by other means. The second way to characterize what the agency is doing with at-sea monitoring is to say that the agency is to look at it as the agency essentially compelling fishermen to enter these contracts with private parties, that is, the federal contractors who provide the at-sea monitoring services. But once again, the agency doesn't have the authority to do that. This is actually one of the results of the Supreme Court's Obamacare decision a few years ago, that five justices agree, a majority of the court agreed, that it's simply outside of an agency's power to compel parties to enter into private contracts with other private parties. So any way you look at it, the agency doesn't have this authority. It's important to bear in mind that participation in this at-sea monitoring program is not voluntary in any real way. As a practical matter, by design, the only way that fishermen can participate in the groundfish industry at all is by being subject to this program. So there isn't any kind of voluntariness. This is basically pure coercion. And so there are kind of deep legal problems with industry funding for at-sea monitoring. We have gone to court with a complaint making these allegations, and we also yesterday filed a motion for preliminary injunctive relief, which, if the court grants it, would lead to an order and a declaration forbidding the agency from requiring industry funding for at-sea monitors by the fishermen who are subject to it. And we're hoping to get a decision on that, hopefully within the next few weeks, before the industry funding requirement would kick in.
Thanks a lot, Stephen. And folks who are on the line, I forgot to add this earlier, but we will have time to take a few questions after all the speakers are done. So if you have questions, the conference moderator will give you instructions on how to go about doing that. The next speaker we have is David Gaethel. As I mentioned earlier, he's a New Hampshire resident based in Hampton. David, I'll turn it over to you, and you can make some remarks here.
Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to say, first of all, that I'm grateful to Cause of Action for taking this case. I was running kind of a grassroots campaign with letters to the editor and letters to Congress and letters to NOAA, asking for relief from this program. I run a small day boat dragger out of Hampton, New Hampshire. We don't gross a lot of money because of all the federal restrictions that existed prior to this on groundfish, and we cannot survive and pay for this. It's that simple. I would ask anybody on the call, could you afford to pay $710 to pay somebody to ride to work with you every day? And we can't either. This is a function of government. Government is the beneficiary of the information that's collected, and it is my belief that the government wants the information, they should pay for it. And the fishermen don't want it. We don't need it. The basic biological information is collected by another program called the Northeast Fishery Observer Program. It covers about 4 to 5% of the trips. That's all that's needed. You don't need the rest of this. I also want to go back to what Stephen said, a study by NOAA's own economists has said that 60% of the active boats will become non-profitable. But in that study, they also pointed out that they couldn't assess what's called a cost of leased fish. For example, I used up a good portion of a number of my species of groundfish in 4 days in June when the fishery opened this year. After that, I've been leasing fish in order to continue to be fishing. I've spent an enormous amount of money on that. And that's all money that comes out of the fish hold. And to have to take out another $710 a day, there just simply isn't that money there. So that's why we're bringing this suit. We think it's a function of government, and the government wants it. Government should pay for it. It's really that simple.
Thanks, David. The next speaker is John Herron, who I mentioned earlier is the manager of Northeast Fishery Sector 13, which again represents fishermen up and down the eastern seaboard. John, it'd be great if you could weigh in here and share a couple thoughts that you had.
Well, first off, as most of you already know, no ground fisherman can pay for legal representation, so we're very happy and pleased that Cause of Action came to basically our rescue. It's like Christmas came early to us, so once again, thank you. But, you know, I've been asking this question about at sea monitoring costs, whether we can afford it, how we can afford it, for over 4 years, and I've never really got an answer. They brushed it aside, and in 2010, Sector 13 landed over 2.9 million pounds of ground fish with 31 permits. In 2014, that is down to 1.4 million with 50 permits, and that's a 52% reduction. And we're scheduled to fish to land even less this year. And 2016 is even going to be worse. The fishermen are just up against it. This, you know, $600-$700 a day cost is going to decimate the day boats, as you just heard, especially my boats down in Point Judith. Their fishing season starts basically right now. They're out there. They'll start right now fishing for Southern New England yellowtail cod and Southern New England flounders. Adding $500, $600, $700 a day will put them out of business. It's just not feasible. And once again, one of the standards of the Magnus-Stevenson Act is to take into account the economic impact of the fishery resource on fishing families in the communities. NOAA has disregarded this standard because it doesn't fit with their agenda. So that's all I have to say at this moment.
Great. Thanks, John. Appreciate all the remarks, all of what's been said so far. And at this point, I think we have a little bit of time for some questions. So, moderator, I would turn it back over to you, and you can sort of let us know if we have anybody who'd like to ask questions on the line.
Certainly. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll pause a few moments to allow questions to queue. And again, that's star and one. And we'll take our first question from John Spillane with the Standard Times. Please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Jack Spillane from the Standard Times. I just have a couple of technical questions. Didn't NOAA agree to pay for the observers for a temporary amount of time? And when did that start and when did it begin? And has Cause for Action been an advocate for other fishing industry issues, or is this something new to you?
Well, I'll answer those questions in reverse order. Actually, we've done – what's that? Yes, this is Stephen Schwartz from Cause of Action again. Actually, there have been lots of fishing cases that we've been involved in. We were involved in the Sandy Yates case in the Supreme Court. We were involved in a case involving a Ms. Nancy Black involving fishermen, I think, whale protection regulations. So we are actually quite experienced in this field, unusually enough for a government accountability nonprofit. As far as the timing question, kind of here's the chain of events. The agency has been kind of threatening and rumbling over the course of the year that industry funding would be required at some point. A month ago today, on November 10th, the agency announced funding is going to run out by the end of the year. Starting January 1, the industry is going to have to fund it. About a week ago, the agency, there was a new development, which is that it turns out that of these various monitoring companies that provide the at-sea monitors, one of them has money left in its contract, more money left in its contract than the others. So And so there's the possibility of some kind of deal among the monitor providers that would have potentially made it possible to extend the funding a little bit longer. Now, to the best of our knowledge, that's still kind of tentative. I'm not aware personally that it's final. So to the best of our knowledge, January 1 is still the drop-dead date for this industry. And two, even if there is more money available, even if it did turn out that there's more money available, our understanding is kind of a back-of-the-envelope calculation. It would only last another couple of weeks. So we're still, one way or the other, looking at a day in probably January, potentially, when suddenly, on one day, the members of this industry can afford to fish, and on the next day, they can't.
Can I ask John Herron and Dave Gatesel, if he wants, how long can you guys hold out if you have to start paying?
Well, this is David. On an individual basis, I'll tie my boat up the day you have to pay. I will not be able to break even. And I've been, you know, I've had the boat I have right now for 33 years. So this is a pretty very serious thing for us.
Sector 13 will have basically three boats. One, the Buzzes Bay from New Bedford. He has no other permit, so he has no other choice. So he will have to continue no matter what. The fishing vessel, the Illusion, he will be able to go back and forth to different fisheries along with the James and Matthew from Point Judith. He will try it, but he's not sure he can continue. But the Illusion will try to continue on a part-time basis, and that'll be the extent of the vessels and out of the 50 permits in Sector 13. Basically, two, possibly three, will continue to fish.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from George Russell with Fox News.
Hi. I was wondering if you have any sense that this action is being coordinated with their plans for protective areas. I mean, they scrape you off first, and that makes everything else a little easier.
This is Stephen Schwartz from Cause of Action. That's an interesting question. We are in the process of investigating kind of what it might be animating this decision by the agency, which is kind of such a strange way for the agency to go about regulating the industry it's supposed to be conserving. So I'd like to reserve judgment on kind of some of those motivational issues in coordination with other agency activities until we've been able to develop a little bit more in that regard. It's a possibility that we're investigating, though.
I think the poor assessments are driving us off the fishing grounds in a much greater degree.
I'm sorry, I think I missed that.
The poor assessments we have from NOAA, which once again gives us the amount of fish we have allocated to us each year as our quota, that is what's driving us away from the fishing grounds and diminishing our fishing effort. And as I said, next year, 2016, there'll even be less effort on Georgia's Bank with the severe cuts they're anticipating.
Thanks, John.
And we'll take our next question from Ed Morin with Maine Public Broadcasting. Please go ahead.
Yeah, this is just kind of a technical question. I've heard of a range for the cost per day of at-sea monitors from $500 to $710. How is that determined, and just exactly what are people paying per day for at-sea monitors?
So right now, of course, they aren't paying anything.
I'm just wondering what they will have to pay, or what at-sea monitors are being paid right now.
So the agency has estimated that the cost is going to be in the neighborhood of $700 a day. It's possible that individual sectors might be able to negotiate lower prices. Sector 13, as I understand it, is working to negotiate a somewhat lower price. I think John can speak to that. But all that being said, we're really kind of talking about marginal issues. One way or the other, they're going to have a cost imposed that they can't pay and that the agency doesn't have the authority to require.
Yeah, you're correct. Sector 13 did negotiate a lower fee. That fee was based on only three active boats, as I just mentioned earlier. However, if more boats decide to try to fish, we could end up paying $625 a day or more. The reason there is a difference is because this particular monitoring company only likes to deal with longer trips. They do not want to deal with the one-day, two-day trips. And the majority of boats that would continue to fish would be the longer trip cycle.
So I guess what that means, this is Stephen Schwartz again, I guess what that means is that what would lower the price from Sector 13's perspective is the fact that fishing boats are being driven out of business.
That's why we achieved a lower cost, yes.
Yes, this is David. I'd like to comment on that because I am from an outport, what's called an outport. In other words, I'm not one of the big hub ports like Gloucester, New Bedford, or Point Judith. And so in the perversity of this whole system, because I'm a day boat and I make a lot of short trips, my trips are typically about 12 hours because I'm a small boat, I'll have to pay more even though I catch a lot less. So the $710 number is probably accurate for boats in New Hampshire. And I'd like to comment on that number a little bit, too, to explain it to people. The actual observer, the person on the boat, gets between $16 and $20 an hour. How they get to $710 from there is one of the great mysteries of this whole program. The fishermen are expected to pay for the observer's training, for observer company overhead, for observer company profit, even though we don't know what that profit is. These are for-profit companies. We're being forced to sign a contract by the federal government with another for-profit company. This whole system is just plain wrong.
Hey, David, it's Jeff. I think for some of the folks on the call, it might be helpful to know which port you're talking about.
Okay, I'm from Hampton, New Hampshire. I'm in what's called Sector 11. And Sector 11 has currently 9 active boats. I don't know if any of them will be active after this occurs, which would make New Hampshire potentially the first state to be entirely removed from the groundfish fishery.
Thanks.
Sector 13 is limited as to which ports they can land in. For example, if we had a breakdown or we chose to land out of a different port from New Bedford or Point Judith, we would pay a substantially larger fee. We would then be responsible for making sure the monitor got home by any means. We would pay them an hourly wage while they were away from their home. We would be paying for lodging if that was necessary. So that could really increase the cost.
Thanks, John.
And we can take our next question from Max Sullivan with Seacoast Media Group.
Hi, yeah. I just had a question about So Regional Administrator John Bullard has said that the $700 figure is kind of misleading because that basically the per days, the observers only have to go on about 20% of the trips. And he said that the real cost to fishermen would be an extra $137 if you averaged it out per day. You know, so I guess what's your reaction to that? Is that truthful? Is that misleading?
David, do you want to take that?
Hi, Max. How you doing? This is David.
Good.
I think that is misleading, quite honestly. I think that we have not, at least in my sector, determined how you're going to pay. In other words, are they going to just take some number out of every trip, or are you going to just pay when you get assigned? One year here, I was assigned observers well over 50% of my trips. Whether that was the luck of the draw or what, I can't tell you. This is supposed to be random, but it doesn't seem to be even. Some boats get covered a lot more than other boats. At any rate, if I was covered at $710 a day and I had to pay the full $710, that basically means that every trip that occurs on, I may as well not untie the lines because I'm going to go backwards. And whether you amortize it over a number of trips or you take it out of one trip, the simple fact is there isn't any more money left to give. These boats are barely getting by now. We've lost 95% of our principal species, which is cod. There isn't a business in the United States that could take a 95% loss in revenue and still survive. And then on top of it, be charged more money by an uncaring government. So, you know, it isn't a matter of whether it's $1, $137, or $710. There isn't any more money left to give.
Sector 13 has told the members that will continue to possibly put aside somewhere close to $200 a day for every day they ground fish. However, last year or the year before, there was a boat in New Bedford that went out ground fishing. They had 9 or 10 broker trips in a row where the owner of the boat paid the crew $1,000 a piece just to maintain his crew. So it's the variable and unforeseen cost that will just devastate the fleet.
And as a reminder, it's star and one if you wish to ask a question. We can go next to David Karkis with the Portland Phoenix. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I just was curious. I haven't heard Maine mentioned in this equation. I see Susan Collins was one of the senators to write a letter asking the agency to prioritize funding. But how much is Maine affected? How many fishermen would be affected in Maine?
Not sure I know the answer to that.
I think that question, I want this John, to David. All active fishermen in Maine would be affected, all active groundfish fishermen. Basically, my understanding in Maine is you have Portland is the major port left, and you have outports up around Cundy's Harbor with the big Maine group, and then you have a scattered boat here and there. Maine will be equally negatively impacted because they have a number of outports. You know, it's a long ways from, as you well know, from, you know, Five Islands or Cundy's Harbor to where these live, and so for those groups to get a contract, they'll probably be paying at least the $710 a day and maybe more because they're going to have to pay extra for these people to travel to the main outports.
And we can take our next question from John Spillane with the Standard Times.
Yeah, this is for John Hammond. Can you just explain, John, a little bit better how you get the $1,000 a piece to maintain crew figure?
No, that was a figure that the owner of that boat gave his crew to maintain his crew. Each time they landed, it was a broker. It was a negative trip. So in order to keep his crew, he personally paid $1,000 a piece out of his own pocket to maintain his crew.
Okay.
So if you add that negative trip and then you add the $700 a day, it's just a deeper hole after trip after trip after trip that they can't recover from. Sector 13 had a couple of trips that same year where the crew members made one time, they made $67 in 8 days. The next trip was $269 and $167. That was for 6 to 8 days on a boat. Unfortunately, ground fishing is still a gamble.
This is David. I'd like to comment on that a little bit because I think people on the call may not understand how people on boats get paid. The crew, including the captain, who is a lot of times the owner, get paid a percentage of the catch. So obviously, if there's no catch, there's no pay. Conversely, if the catch is good, the pay might be quite reasonable, might be good. But a number of things come off the top before that percentage is taken out. So, for example, historically, used to be fuel, ice, and food came off the top of the gross stock from the sale of the fish, and then the rest of the money was split between the crew and the boat. The boat typically gets 50% of the money to pay its bills, such as insurance, mortgage, fishing gear maintenance, things of that nature. Now there's an added cost because of sectors where the least fish have to come off the top as well. This is the money you pay to what we call armchair fishermen, people who may not even own a boat anymore but got a share of the quota. And, you know, you go out, you take all the risk, you take the gamble, you catch the fish, and they get paid a lease fee for their allocation. So now that money comes off the top, and that's the part the government hasn't figured into this in their economic report. And then the crew and the captain get their share, and the boat gets their share. The same thing would have to happen with the $710 a day. And if you take out now the fuel, the ice, the food, the leased fish, And then add this $710 a day in on a boat like mine, and it's quite clear in our exhibits, it's either going to be a zero or a negative number. You can't very well go to a crewman and say, here's a bill for going to work for 15 hours today. So you're basically just out of business. It's really that simple. And I believe the government knows this, and for whatever reason, they don't seem to care.
Speaking of the government knowing this, they did a report. State of Massachusetts did a report in 2010, and then that report was followed up by a report in 2012 by SMAS, and then the council requested the same report, and all three reports had similar findings that 60% of the boats are going to be are one mechanical disaster away from bankruptcy.
And it does appear we have no further questions, so I'll return the floor to our presenters for any additional or closing remarks.
Thanks, everybody. Again, appreciate your time to do this call today. And thank you to David and John as well for doing the call and providing all the insight. If there are any questions, if any of you folks have any other questions, you should have my contact information, but feel free to reach out, particularly if you have any questions for Stephen or other folks here at Cause of Action. I think the only other thing I should mention, I don't know if we mentioned this, but Cause of Action is obviously taking this case pro bono, which is, what we usually do. Like I said, any questions, feel free to reach out, and we'll try to get you what you need. And that's all I have. I think that's all we have here. So thanks again. Appreciate the time. And we'll keep you all posted with updates.